week are the tutors. We've also got a good selection of tutors, postgraduate students, who will come to the workshops, same tutors, week after week after week, will be helping you solve problems, teaching you what I didn't teach you very well in the lectures. They'll fill the gaps. And they are usually hugely popular among students. So I've got great hopes that you'll get along. The details of those tutors, you will see how we organise the workshops. We'll leave it to the next week. You don't need to have the list of contact details of all tutors, only your favourite one. Right. Structure of the course. Lectures, Tuesdays and Fridays, which is, if you had other courses, 20 credit course, and we've only got 2 lectures a week. How come? That's a bit odd. And it is. I'll explain you why it sort of makes sense. To compensate, we have 4 hours of workshops every week. And it's the workshops that are central. That's where all the work is done. Problem solving, learning, right? And you are doing most of it. It's a bit like lectures are like watching Wimbledon on television, and the workshops is actually playing it. You see the difference? I've tried. I'm rubbish at tennis. I watch Wimbledon every summer. So trust me. So we have few lectures when I do the work, and more workshop time when you do the work. Right? You can only learn maths, physics, any science by solving problems. The more entertaining the lecture, the less you learn. So you notice I've got chalk and talk. There will be no PowerPoint presentation. There's been no entertainment, no animations. Whatever animations we have, it will all be performed live, right? That's the only entertainment. Otherwise, it's chalk and talk. And instead of we're smoothly going to the handouts from the back, there is those workbooks. Those are much more comprehensive than the lecture notes. The lecture notes will highlight things that we believe are important, things that we believe, that means I believe, will help you with problem solving. Whereas here we have more comprehensive notes. I'll talk more about what's in the workbooks. It's going to be, we aim for about 8 workbooks for this course and 8 for the next course. So it's a bit shorter than the 11 weeks that the term lasts. So there is a little bit of room for, if it is a very difficult week, to push it a bit longer than just the exact 1 calendar week per workbook. If you want supplementary books, there is the next handout, which is Maths for Physics 1 handbook. So this, it gives you syllabus, gives you a little bit what the program guide gives you, also assessment regulations, and a list of supplementary books. We don't follow any particular textbook. We just make stuff up. But for every little chapter, there are books that are good. Serious Expansion, for instance, Mary Boas, right? That's where I've been getting my inspiration from, and so on. So that's all written, sort of a bit of inspiration. And naturally, there are loads, millions of more maths books that you may find useful. So don't be shy. Books are good. Right, workbooks, problem sheets. In the workbooks, we have problems. What are problems, by the way? There's a bit of confusion. What is a problem? A problem, we also have solved examples and exercises in those workbooks. What's the difference? What's a problem? So it's a question. Does it have an answer? No? So we have problems. Here's a problem sheet. No answers given, no solutions given. Those are the weekly problem sheet. We call them checkpoint questions because after you've done them, we do give them answers to check against. They come a bit later. But the main starting point is to start solving problems that you don't have a solution to. That's the only way to learn. As soon as we give you a problem and an answer to check immediately, those we call exercises. And in the workbook, there are quite a few exercises. So they are similar to problems, but they've got a little answer. And then we have solved examples where you have a full worked solution. That's the most rubbish thing ever, because that's my solution. And although that is a solution, and hopefully a correct solution, there might be many more equally correct. And I don't like solved examples, because in worst case, you lose your confidence because you had an absolutely brilliant, unorthodox solution, absolutely correct. But then you look at my solved solution and it's different. You lose confidence. You start doubting yourself. You lose momentum. That's bad. So it is much better to just do the problems and gain confidence by just finding ways to check it, if possible, asking tutors, asking me, comparing with your friends if you're unsure. Better way of learning rather than following my solved examples. So that's just an advice. What else? You may notice that all those handouts are very tiny. We apologize for that. There is a reason. We've done it for second or third year in a row. We have them in half print. It's trying to save on paper. We're trying to go paper free. So this is like a compromise. We give you a tiny handout. It's on paper. But on Learn, I haven't learned it yet, but on Learn, there will be all materials that we hand out, they will be electronically on Learn. And then, of course, you can either print it out in large letters or just use your computer screen, laptop screens, zoom in if you like, so you can't see something. And naturally, if any one of you needs bigger print, let me know and we'll provide a few normal size prints which I can bring to the workshops. Brilliant. Problem sheets. So weekly problem sheets, checkpoint questions. Do as many as you can. The ones with stars or sometimes double stars could be a bit more challenging. We hope that you will do all of them. We hope you've already done all of them next time we meet at a workshop. But there is no pressure. You don't have to hand in any of those for marking. The assessment, I'll explain that later. We've got a different set of questions for assessment. But if you can't make the assessment question, then we do accept handing those in for marking. Hence, if those are the problems, then those red booklets represent solutions. And you write those solutions. How brilliant is that? I'm giving you problems and solutions. All you have to do is to fill the pages. Write neatly, even if you don't want to hand it in for marking. It's good idea to write neatly. Use colour. Shall I give away one of my secrets? Use pink. Maths is much easier when written in pink. Now you didn't hear it from me. So those are just notebooks, so you can get started already after this lecture to solve the first set of problems. Another important thing, no calculators. That means electronic calculators. You can use your gray cells. Not allowed. Not needed. And there is a reason for that. We're not fostering engineers. You just Google something or look it up in a big handbook. We want you to start to train your minds for problem solving.
volumes or whatever is a generic no calculator. Goes for exams as well, no calculators on the exam. So we don't mean you to become good at number crunching. Big numbers are bad. What we want you to do already from day one to start practicing your minds, to factorize, to simplify, to keep your expressions, the numbers, anything you're working with as tiny and under control as possible. You're in charge, not the big numbers. You're in charge of your math problems. The only way to do it is to just not give you an option of a calculator. You don't need it, and we don't allow it. I've got a bucket for workshops, so I'll just take them away and then we say, fire.
You think I'm kidding? Right. We are doing really well. So, do you want to know about assessment, or is it too bad news and we'll just leave it till later? Do you want to know about assessment of this course? Just have it, I mean, it is written in the handbook and in the course booklet that's on Student Wiki. Well, it's 20% continuous assessment or coursework. The only thing to say about that is please do it, because it will count. It's 20%. It's not a trivial percentage. You can do the math. It could be your first homework to find out what mark do you have to get on the December exam in order to pass the course with the lowest possible grade. That's 40%, a D, without any coursework at all. It's quite high. So I do recommend you to do your very best to keep up with the coursework. Any problems, just email me and let me know. And then I can say, I don't really care. Now I won't. We'll always find a way to accommodate. When there is will, there is way. We want you to just to keep up. The exam, 80% of the final mark from the exam in December, trust me, it's almost like it's tomorrow. So when the course ends, there is exactly 1 week, week 12 of revision. And then, if you're unlucky, as soon as that week is over, there is the MFP1 exam. We don't have any control when the exams are. It's all done centrally, right? So if we are unlucky, you only got 1 week from the end of the course until you have to show that you're brilliant. And I expect all of you to be brilliant at the exam, because that makes me look good. So don't let me down. Again, you think I'm joking. Right. So, very short slip road. Do everything you can not to fall behind. A lot of the material we do, you are familiar with. But it will go fast, and we expect fluency. So problem solving. So hires looks a bit like higher syllabus plus a bit of complex numbers and so on. But it will go fast, and we expect unseen problems and problem solving, a bit like advanced hires plus. Right. I'll talk more about the maths later. So the continuous assessment, the first chance to score a really good mark is already in your first workshop. Oh, you're going to love me for that. We're going to give you a little class test. But don't worry, because we're going to give you a very similar, if not the same test, in week 11 as well. And only the best out of two counts. So, well, you've got your first problem sheet to work on as a start, just to get those grey cells moving. And then you do your best, and hopefully this won't count, and you'll do it again in week 11 and score 100%. So that will be one out of five coursework assignments. The other four are much more traditional. We'll just give you a little review question. So it will be one question per week. So you only hand it in four times during the course, hand in two questions. And we do recommend you to go for those questions rather than hand in what you've done on the ordinary problem sheets. But if you're ill or something happens and you can't, then this is better than nothing. Okay? We'll talk, but there's plenty of time to talk about the details when the time comes. If I remember correctly, the first hand-in is beginning of October. You may know it better, 2nd of October, 3rd of October, something like that. It's all written down in the handbook. So, any questions or something is unclear, how does it work, just email me or we'll talk about it at the workshops. I'll be on most of the workshops. And way too early to talk about exam, but I can tell you this much, that in the exam there are two parts, part A, part B, and part A is tutorial questions. So it is worthwhile doing those checkpoint questions, because I'll choose my favorites and put them in part A in the exam. So yet another reason to do everything we ask you to do. And part B will be problem solving, part unseen question, similar to those little hand-ins that you're gonna get during the course. So hopefully during the course, you'll get practice on your, to do your entire exam really well. And good news for number three, four, five. So about 2/3 of you will do really well. So just, oh, and the other thing, there was a study which showed that people who sit in the front rows, perhaps you should have done row wise, sort of the first two rows fine, I'm sorry, God, and third row, then again two rows fine. And so, statistically speaking, there was a study and they figured the students who come naturally and sit in front of a lecture theatre do well in the exam. I think it's a myth, but I'm not a professional in that sense. Now, I think we've done most of the admin stuff and we've still got plenty of time, which is brilliant, so we can talk a little bit about the actual course. This all was admin stuff. So I'm pleased that it is done and over with. Maths for physics. For the third year in a row now, it's physicists teaching you maths. It always used to be School of Mathematics. And then there was a revolution and we took over. And somehow it coincided by them hiring me. And I don't only teach you maths and physics, I also teach you Swenglish because I come from Sweden. So if I don't know geographically where you are from, then I've got an alibi, I'm a foreigner. Language can sometimes be a little bit Germanic. Apologies, but see it as a bonus, a serendipity. You get maths, physics, and you get a new language, Swenglish. You could wonder, so why does people take, why did we take over maths teaching from School of Mathematics? Because after all, I'm not a mathematician, so I'm a mathematical physicist, but I'm not a mathematician. And yet we have the confidence to do that. There is a reason, a very good reason. I mean, what is your view? Why is, well, first of all, is maths important for physics? Yes. Oh, that was £20 well spent. Yeah, it is. It's you can do maths without physics, but you can't do physics without maths. People have tried. You may know famous names like Niels Bohr from Copenhagen. I'm in Copenhagen every summer. Respect him tremendously. He did physics almost without maths, but he got it wrong. So people try, but it doesn't go very well. So what would you say? What's good about maths, physics? Any ideas? Well, Newton invented calculus. Very clever, he needed that, because he had all those ideas. What was he doing? He was sitting under a pear tree. It was a pear, don't believe it, it was an apple. And was thinking, oh, what shall I do today? Oh, I don't really know. And then the pear dropped down, and he remembered, oh, I know, I'm gonna write down a few laws of nature. And in order to do that, he figured, oh, I can't do it. No, don't have enough maths. So he invented calculus. So you could say, I mean, a very common answer is that mathematics, it's a tool. A tool, a very sort of clever tool, important tool. An important tool. Is that it? Well, if that was the case, then Well, we've got about 20 more minutes. I could give you all the formulas you need, and we'll be done with it. And miss all the rest. Obviously, that's not the answer. It's convenient, but it's not enough. There is more to it. It's something to do with understanding. The physical laws can be written down in terms of maths, so it's become a language. So to understand physics, it becomes absolutely necessary to understand maths, mathematical relations, algebra, calculus, functions, function space, tangent space, group theory. We can just expand bigger and bigger. And there are physicists today working with conformal field theory, string theory, who don't have any maths to use as tools. They have to invent it. They are developing maths in order to do their physical theories. An elegant language. And there is something very beautiful to be able to express nature, physical laws, in terms of mathematics. It's the simplicity and the elegance. But having said that, physics is still an empirical science, don't worry. However beautiful the mathematical theory, if it doesn't agree with the experiment, then it's wrong. But it is a nice thought. Perhaps the most important reason, and it would be interesting to see during this entire year, perhaps not today, but during this entire year, we'll see how many of you will agree with me. The main reason to do maths and physics, or for a physicist to do maths, it is for the sheer pleasure of it. It's an absolutely beautiful subject, especially doing it in a relaxed way, the way physicists do maths. Just we do it for the pleasure of it. The subject of maths is enjoyable. And I hope that, well, I've got about 44 lectures to convince you that this is the case, and that's the reason we do it. One lecture at a time. And I also hope that because, if you look at the syllabus, a lot of the material you've already done before at school. When you did it at school, it was new, you saw it for the first time, algebra, calculus, differential, integrate, oh, scary, unfamiliar, difficult. You worried about your highest grade, will I get an A or is my life over? Now we can relax and look back and enjoy it. You'll have a chance to see the big picture rather than just one equation at a time. So I do hope you'll enjoy this course. And I don't mean to scare you too much. I'm still a bit shocked from the August results from the year above. But you are a new cohort, new students, new year. Everything is going to be different, and you're going to be absolutely brilliant. So all this about a third, forget about it. We're going to have a 100% success rate. Yeah, good. As long as we have a deal. Now, we're going to start not at the beginning. We're going to start in the middle with algebra, as you see on the first workbook. So basic algebra, it's absolutely brilliant. You should read the can't remember. Oh, yes, it's in the footnote. There is a story about how in the early 20th century, the chief engineers who were developing aeroplanes, they were also the first test pilots. And that was a quote here. It was an efficient way to get rid of poor engineering. So this brings us to this algebra. We needed to get to do algebraic manipulations quickly and accurately, but we are not going to ask you to fly any of your own aeroplanes. but the ethos is the same. So we start from the middle with algebra. The mathematicians mean, it's a middle for mathematicians because they would start with defining sets of numbers, because they need the definitions of sets in order to start with algebra. Physicists don't, we're not very bothered about it. For instance, Pythagoras' theorem. We all know Pythagoras' theorem? We need a right angle triangle. And we know that the square of that, the sum of the square of the sides equals the square of the hypotenuse, which is a very nice result, quite interesting, I'd say. Mathematicians start worrying about it. How do we prove it? Is it always true? How many assumptions do I need to make in order to make sure that I've proved it correctly? They worry about so many things, whereas we don't need to worry about it. We just say, oh, that is quite interesting. Let's see if I can use it. And we will use it loads. So if you are to learn one equation from today's lecture, let's learn Pythagoras. Right? So mathematicians worry about whether things exist. Physicists worry about what is the answer. So it's a big difference. If you're interested in the pure mathematician way of doing things, proofs, lemmas, the full theory of sets, group theory, then you should choose the specialist math course as an option. That would be my recommendation to all of you, but I appreciate if you settle with just me. But I'm not gonna do pure maths. Just to get your expectations low enough so I can't fail. So what we're going to do today is introducing numbers and symbols. And if you're lucky, you're going to get your first animation. First, the very first numbers that you all learned, do you know what those are? What they're called? Nursery kids already do it. Natural. Yes. Apologies, my ears, hearing is completely rubbish. Natural numbers. In whatever calligraphic type setting. So the set of natural numbers include 1, 2, 3, and so on. 3 dots means and so on. Curly brackets mean a set. Okay? Another set would be integers. Down to distinguish natural numbers from integers. Often we just use integers more often than natural numbers, but for completion, here we go. And they can be either positive or negative. And again, so on. And then we can construct new sets of numbers called rational numbers. So we have P over Q, that's just the standard math notation, and we introduce a little, no, this little thing here is such that we have P is a member of integers and Q as a member of natural numbers. And this form, because we're not using calculators in this course, rational numbers, to simplify it as far as possible so that you can't do anything more with them, like 1 over 3, whereas 4 over 2 is not good enough. You lose a mark on the exam because that would just be annoying. Because 4 over 2 is not a rational number, it's, well, it's an integer or a natural number, it's a 2. Whereas 1 over 3, I do not want to see any 0.333333. No. 1 over 3, and that's the final answer. Confidence, you put your foot down. We're not using calculators, right? So this is three different numbers. There's only one more, which will be the most difficult one to write down. And those are the real numbers. Real numbers. So it's set of length, like in a measuring tape, along the real number axis. So real numbers. So it's a set of lengths, it's a measuring tape, and it can go, it can cover any numbers, any integers, rational numbers, from, it will go from minus infinity to plus infinity along a real number axis. Would be my real number axis. I can put the zero somewhere. And this is the axis that we are going to live on for the first 4 or 5 weeks of the course. So a lot of things that we're going to talk about starting on Friday will look a bit strange if we confine ourselves, all our main characters that live along the number axis. We're going to see strange things like algebraic equations that look perfectly innocent, but they don't have a solution because there is no such number along the real number axis that would solve the equation. We're going to see theorems that doesn't make any sense. Yet they're true, but they don't make any sense because we can't show it. We're stuck on this real number axis. And we're going to stay there until we're introducing the fifth and final set of numbers. So those are the first four. There is only one more number set, and that's complex numbers. But we're not there yet. So if you know anything about complex numbers, forget it. For the first 4 weeks, we are stuck on the real number axis. And another real number, and this way jump along the real axis. But we can't do any fancy business. We can't leave this line. This blackboard exists for us, but not for anyone who lives along the real number axis. Are you ready for the first animation? You know the little Pac-Man figures on ancient computer games from my childhood? That's how it feels like to be stuck on a real number axis. It's a major constraint. Incredibly convenient. Trust me, once we do complex numbers, you'll wish we hadn't. Because real number axis, we are stuck. This is all we can do. Right? And can't leave. So if I want to go someplace else, I can't. I'll just have to follow this line until I get where I need to be. I'm not even going to try. So this is as good as the animations we'll get. So this was real number line animation. You can try it at home.
So once we have numbers and symbols,
We're going to use a lot of symbols, and you may find a little bit of a shock just looking at the first problem sheet. We go crazy with symbols. It would be quite convenient to tell you about the maths symbols, because mathematicians are pretty good with symbols. They've got their own set of a convention, if you like, for what they use the symbols for. And that's what you might be more familiar with. Constants. It's quite often we use tiny little letters. A, B, C, alpha, beta, gamma. Quite a bit of Greek letters. We use variables. So variables, constants are stuck on the real number axis for us. Variables like x can move along the real axis, just like the Pac-Man figure. So we can call our variable, say, x or y or z or time t or tau for t and so on. And sometimes we also want to use counters or indices. And those are often used as I, J, K, L, M, N, and so on. This is the maths standard set of symbols. For functions, they often use F or G or H. And so on. So now you're going to love me for this. We're not going to stick to that. Because in physics, we have constants from anywhere in the Greek alphabet. Lambda is a good constant. Kappa, excellent constant. Mu, oh, I did that yesterday. That's a coefficient of friction. Brilliant constants. And many, many more, right? Variables. Anything. We can have both little letters, we can have capital letters, energy, we could have mass. Think of a rocket, the mass of the rocket fuel. As the rocket goes, we have a variable mass. So there is no end. Basically, we can call things anything, but raw mass density, pressure, you see, it's just no stopping. The counters, we quite like to stick to the mass counters. We're definitely going to do counting in MFP2. Right now I can't remember whether we introduced it already in MFP1, possibly, but that's a good way of counting with IJK. In later years, you'll count with mu nu and so on when you go to four vectors. And those are reserved for three vectors, but that comes later. So basically, the point I'm trying to make is that because you're going to be physicists, it's important from early on to relax about notation and realize that the equation is the same, whatever you call the variable. Same equations of same solutions, whatever the letters are involved. And from early on in this course, we make absolutely no pretense of calling a variable x. In fact, as you notice already on the first problem sheet, the variable is called pretty much anything. And the thing I can advise you to do, if you today memorize Pythagoras, tomorrow practice calligraphy. Because rho and p, this could be a mass density, and this is pressure. And where do they come together? They come together all the time. Thermodynamics, right? Flow of liquids and gases in the same equation. So you have rho and p very similar. If you are at least the tiniest bit sloppy, you will end up in tremendous and completely unnecessary mess that could have been avoided had you spent your Wednesday afternoon practicing calligraphy. The other things, I mean, there are loads of pitfalls. There are number two, and Z. Find your way to write your Zs so that you don't misread them as twos in halfway through your solution. V's and W's and omegas, another thing. So calligraphy, neat writing, it will save your life. It could make a difference between pass and fail on a physics exam. Calligraphy. We've written in the beginning of the workbook the full Greek alphabet, so you can start practicing all those little wiggly symbols. So we've got about one more minute to do after introducing numbers and symbols. The only thing left is arithmetic operations. Arithmetical operations. And you know all of them. We can add, subtract, we can multiply. Now, I would like to beat out of you, if necessary, the way of denoting multiplication with a cross. It's most annoying and highly confusing when we start working with vectors and vector cross product, because this cross, the multiplying sign, is reserved for a very particular type of multiplication, which is a vector cross product, comes later in MFP2. So for multiplying, either use a dot. I think in the notebooks we use the British old fashioned. I had no idea how to know things, so I had to learn it. And I learned from really old professors, British ones, and they all told me that to denote multiplication, so we have A multiplied with B, you put the dot down there. In Sweden we would put it in the middle, but we don't, so we put it down there. So if you see A dot B or 2 dot 3, this is 6, 2 times 3. So for if you have symbols like constants A and B, I prefer writing nothing and it means A times B. If you have numbers, put a little dot or just skip it and write it 6. Okay? Division, just put it as a bracket or like A divided by B or A divided by B. Don't use those calculator symbols, leave them at high school. We'll leave them at high school. And what else? Power. That's hard to write down. Sometimes in emails, when you get me an email, I might write it something like that, with a little wedge. And that means A to the power of 2. Right. And once we know those, we need to know rules of precedence. Or divide, and finally plus or minus, and from left to right, and that from left to right applies only when you multiply, divide, or add or subtract. To take the power, A to the power of something, X to the power of something, always comes first. And then of course we have brackets just to confuse things, and convention of how to use brackets. I think we're going to have to start looking at that next lecture. So I've run a little bit over time, so apologies for that. So hopefully I'll see at least half of you back on Friday. In the very far back. Yeah.
The handouts,
just where this guy is with a backpack in that corner.
Hi, for booking the tutorials,
I've booked my physics ones, and my two preferences are either the Monday or the Thursday, but that's the same time as two of the options for the maths, and I don't want to tell both maths and physics that I can do the same day, so what should I do? Should I wait until I'm allocated a physics one, or before I tell maths which one I can do, or what should I do?
Email Dawn,
right, okay.
And she will be able to find, because she looks after both courses.
Right, okay.
Email Dawn.
Okay, thank you.
I'm not sure if you know, but I didn't get a physics handbook yesterday. Where could I get one?
Tomorrow comes the physics one again, a physics lecture.
So ask them.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
A little bit closer to the back.
Yes, I've got actually one set here, and the rest are up there. You can have my demo X of everything.
Thank you. So would I, to get this one down the same way? Oh, over here.